Good morning and welcome to the March 6, 2023 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Board of Commissioners. Today we're meeting in a study session this morning and a business session this afternoon. I'd like to welcome all our guests. We do have a number of guests today and it's great to see interest in our agenda. This morning we have four commissioners present. Commissioner Bergeron has been excused and our regular staff of Kirk Hudson, our manager, Rebecca Newman, our clerk of the board, and Eric Walquist, our attorney. As I said before, I'd like to welcome everybody here. This meeting is recorded, and we are on Teams online, and so it would be helpful to remind everybody to silence any electronic devices this morning. And if you do wish to testify at some point on any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the front table and grab the mic and introduce yourself and your address for the record, because we are recording this. And without further ado, I think we'll move right on to the Pledge of Allegiance and our safety minute. And I took a little moment to introduce myself to Fondi Irawan this morning, and he's going to share something about himself during that safety minute and Pledge of Allegiance. So.
Pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You guys can hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Just make sure your face is visible in the iPad there.
You can turn the iPad, Molly.
Yeah, you can just move it.
Turn the machine, yeah.
There you go.
You can also use the mic on the table if you want. That way you can have your hands free. Just put it up close to your mouth.
Okay. Okay, good morning, everybody. My name is, I'll start with the introduction first. My name is Fondi Irawan, and I am a senior project manager at the Brock Island Dam, Powerhouse 1, and I'm part of the EPM, which is an engineering project management group over there. We are refurbishing right now, currently, two units that's ongoing, which is B3 and B6. And my team is over there just wondering, like, okay, when are you coming back over there? Work is ongoing. But anyway, this is a special occasion, so thank you for having me. It's an honor for me to be here to see all of the commissioners first time. And I've been with the Chelan PUD for just over 1 year, to be exact, is 13 months. So I just passed the introductory period, just so you guys know. So it's actually, thank you. So I'm originally from Indonesia, and I was born there, and I got my degree in South Carolina. I went to college there, and before Chelan PUD, I worked for heavy industrial construction company with name Peter Kiewit for 13 years, and we've been around North America. And now, since last year, February, I joined with the Chelan PUD. So thanks for having me.
Welcome.
Yeah, good to have you.
Thank you. Okay, let's start with the presentation for the HPI, Human Performance Improvement Minutes for today. Next slide, please. Okay, so HPI principles. One more. Yeah. Okay, as you may already seen this probably a few times, or that we do have a philosophy principles in here that basically we're just saying that we are human being and we do all make some errors in here and here, now, or when, we don't know, but we have to realize that nobody is perfect and nothing is perfect, and we do can always improve and be better, and it's pretty much up to us if we do want to learn, and we can do it together individually or as a team. So basically, yes, we do all can be better, and The reason why we are here is to improve ourselves, and we do work together as a team. Next, please. Okay. So before we go to this one, I do want to talk a little bit of the example of the HPI itself that I want to give you. This is based on the example of the reality, actually, of what, based on our, my 1 year experience last year, where we did work with our contractors for B4 unit. And based on the result on the B4, that, you know, HPI, one of the way we can learn is from the lesson learned. So we did actually from the full years, one of my pretty much goal is to learn from the company, learn from the project itself. And I did, you know, capture lesson learned from that unit. And one of the way that we could do better definitely as a team, EPM team, and also engineering project management team, is by doing better on the, we call it as built or redlining the documents of what we already installed in the generating unit itself. So we could do definitely better in there. And on this new unit, B3, that I'm leading with the EPM group, we are starting doing this process, start from the beginning. It's not easy. It's a lot of work through the system. We call it submittal exchange. So the way we do it, we link them, all of the technical documents in there relating with, let's say, I'm not trying to make it to be too technical here, NCR, which is a non-conformance report, RFI is a request for information report, change order, field work order, etc. So we link them directly to the actual related documents or technical documents. So start from beginning. So we know what are each of the documents related to which. So by the middle to the end, it will be easier instead of waiting until the end of the project where nobody would remember what happens, like even last week, don't even think about last year. So if we started earlier doing this as building and redlining through the system that we have, it will be easier at the end. Who knows that actually, I don't know if I'm going to be still here next week or tomorrow. So if I'm not here anymore, at least the system already have it. So let the system do the work instead of we do the work manually and nobody will be able to do so. So that's the lesson learned that we have on the B4, and now we're doing it, this B3 ourselves, which is our central maintenance performing this work instead of our third-party contractors. Now we have our own control to do this better. So that's one of the example on the real life right now on the project on the Powerhouse One Rock Island that we learned that related with this human performance improvement, which is actually more like a team performance improvement. So, any questions on those? Okay, move on. All right, so this one related with the next, I don't want to take too much time of yours, but this next few slides is going to be, it's an extra, because I'm really patient with the safety, so I choose a stop work authority, so because one is a powerful, important, related with the safety, and sometimes actually we forget of what is, you know, what is safe stop work authority is, but it's sometimes also is not easy thing to do, because of like, okay, depending on the situation itself, but it's actually just, I'll give you an example when we get to it. So start with the definitions first in here. So I put some of the capitals on the words, kind of the key of the, to make it easier for the definitions. It's basically, it's a safety policy, procedures, and program that allowing us as an employee or contract employees to stop the next action, condition, or behaviors that we think is not a safe thing to do. Next, please. Yeah. And another one is another important word is employees at every level. So meaning like any of the employees, whatever your level of the position you are with Challenge PUD, have the right to stop the work if they think that, if they consider that activities is an unsafe for them to start with. However, they can do like the how to do it is a different way. You need to do it in a respectful ways and ask the question. I just ask a simple questions because my background was before this is construction. So I have to deal with that daily basis pretty much. I ran a crew. I have a crew. I have other that I have to deal with. So I have to be respectful in order to get the work done. So another word that important in here is the culture. So safety culture is a big thing. This stop work authority can be very, very powerful and important and can be very benefit for the company if we can make this as a safety culture where actually every employees understand what is the meaning of this, the powerful of this, and what when they can use it, where they can use it, who can use it, and how they can use it. Next one, please. And this one, another one is every person can create and maintain the workplace free of illness, injury, and other loss if we can do this together as a organization. Okay, 5 W's and H. So it's going to be start with the why. So, okay, so why does a stop work authority is important? So, as an employees of the Challenge PUDs, it is our responsibility and obligations, and also we have this right also, and because we care of our people, families, customer owners, communities, we do this stop work authority. We do the stop work because we do that. Next, please. Yeah. And the next one is who. Who has the power or authority to do the stop work? I touched a couple times already there previously that any employees at any levels in the organization has this authority. And the next one is where can you do stop work? This is a lot of them. So anytime you feel that actually the work, actually you're not ready to do it, if you don't have any the right PPE, you don't have the right tools, you don't have the right equipment, you don't have the right plans, if you have any changes in your scope of work, if you have any emergency situation, you have alarm going on, near miss, you pretty much can do all stop work on any of those. But not necessarily like actually the whole project will be stopped, but that particular of the work itself can be stopped first. Just for the questions, just to make sure they're in the right plan or where they want to be pretty much. The next is when. When can you do stop work? Anytime that you or anybody that feel that actually they see something that, oh, that might be not safe, even though they think that, is it safe or is it not safe? So you do this because you care about it, and if you feel that actually something that is not safe and you think that may result to the unwanted event, so you want to actually start questioning it. The next one is the what. So what is the importance of this stop work? Basically, is to save time, to save resource, to save life, which also results all of them will be to save money, which is the public monies. And also the next one will be to prevent the emotional impacts that may cause afterward. Next one is the H, is how. How do we do the stop work? So if you see anything out there that actually anything not safe, you think it's not safe, first one is stop the work. Again, it's just simply ask the questions and be respectful to that group or to the person that you think actually, okay, hey, just asking questions. Hey, I don't understand about this. Maybe can you explain something to me that I don't understand? And after that, if you understand that and you feel that still is not safe, the next step will be to notify the supervisors overseeing of the work itself. And the next step will be to investigation, maybe with the superintendents or supervisor with the safety group. And the next step will be to correct the unsafe behavior and the situation itself. Before, the last step will be to resume with the work itself to make sure everything is clear before you you feel that actually has been taken care of before you go back to the work itself. If you still feel not safe, you have the right to still actually go for the next level if you would like to. Okay. I think that's about it for my presentation for today. Any questions? Comments or concern there from anybody?
Commissioners, any questions?
South Carolina, you're a Gamecock?
Yes, yeah. I am, yes.
So is my dad.
Oh, okay. Good to know.
Thanks for the presentation.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Pondy.
At this time, item two on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. Management has recommended that we potentially move resolution item number 11 to the consent agenda. And unless there's any disagreement from any member of the board, that will be done. Meet with everybody's approval?
Absolutely.
Great. So the also, at this time, I'll let the members of the public know that I anticipate that most of the people are here for item three, Confluence Parkway, and our staff will have a presentation, and at the end, we will have public. I know the city would like to have some input. I believe they would, and any other public input at the end of that presentation. And once again, remind people to come up to the table and introduce themselves for the record. So, that being said, let's move to item three.
So item three is Confluence Parkway, and with us, Justin Erickson and Eric Walquist, who've been putting an awful lot of time on this with the city representatives as well in the room. So Justin's going to walk through the presentation. Eric will add in, and then we'll allow both the city and public comment.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners. Eric and I are privileged to be here and walk you through this effort, and I'm going to start out with the next slide, which after many months of discussion and review, the city and the district do have a final draft of the land exchange agreement to present to each governing body. Before we go into the details there, I want to provide you a little bit of background, talk to you specifically about the district's 4F responsibilities. Again, we'll go through the agreement, provide a staff recommendation, talk about next steps, and then provide a couple of opportunities for public comments, as you mentioned, Commissioner Smith. There is no action requested of you today. In 2011, the Chelan-Douglas Transportation Council prepared the SR 285 North Wenatchee Transportation Master Plan. This plan identified the need for additional corridor capacity. It established a purpose and need, alternatives were considered, and described in related planning documents from there onward. The district has been participating with the city in the review and analysis of the Confluence Parkway for many years, with correspondence dating to around 2017. These discussions, again, were amplified in 2017. In 2019 and 2020, a couple of things happened. We identified a formal role and responsibilities, which were outlined in a memorandum of understanding with the city. And then we also were deemed a cooperating agency for the environmental review process. A cooperating agency status simply means that we have special knowledge, expertise, and or jurisdiction under the environmental laws. And the MOU outlined roles and responsibilities related to our joint cooperation in the NEPA process, public outreach requirements, and reviews of technical reports. Section 4F responsibilities are stipulated through the Federal Highway Administration, and it states that FHWA, as well as state transportation agencies, cannot approve the use of land from publicly owned parks, recreational areas, wildlife and waterfowl refuges, and public and private historical sites unless the following conditions apply. And we're going to focus on the first one, which is that no feasible and prudent avoidance alternatives exist, or that the action includes all possible planning to minimize harm. There's a secondary pathway if the impacts are determined to be de minimis, which was not the case in the situation. So the district has a series of lands that are under the 4F jurisdiction. It includes Confluence State Park, the Horan Natural Area, which is technically part of the state park, the Apple Capitol Loop Trail, at least those portions that are within our parks, and then also technically Walla Walla Point Park. That park is within the area of potential impact, but there have been no impacts identified. Wanted to be technically correct and include that for your knowledge. So, under federal regulations, we have a very specific role in the 4F process. The federal government is charged with determining the balancing and reviewing the least overall harm, and it's determined by balancing multiple factors, including the views of officials with jurisdiction, and of which we are one. So the district's role is to evaluate and provide comments related to the 4F evaluation, and if the least overall harm standard has been met. And to that end, the district and the city have been working on a land exchange agreement, given the overlapping federal requirements, the complexity of the project, and our mutual desire to mitigate impacts. We will also, it is also anticipated that the district will make two related FERC filings to facilitate the project. As you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about Confluence Parkway. This I won't go into this in detail. This is just simply from 2022, all of the public discussions that we had. I did want to highlight a couple of things. First of which, in March of 2022, the PUD did sponsor open house, as well as some walking tours and a very extensive public survey. And we received about 970 public responses and comments. We had about 100 members of the public attend the open house and walking tours. And then in November of 2022, we noted the land exchange agreement at your public meeting and described where we were at and that we were working towards bringing you the agreement that we've now that we're now before you speaking of. In terms of public engagement, I also wanted to note a series of opportunities that were provided by the City of Wenatchee. The City of Wenatchee held open houses in April of 2019, March of 2020, June of 2021. They also had held walking tours in March of 2022, separate from the district tours. And more recently, in December 2022, they held an open house associated with the NEPA process and public hearing on January 12, 2023. The city received 70 written public comments or thereabouts, and about 10 individuals testified at that hearing. I believe the board has all of those comments and has had an opportunity to review those. With that, I'm going to turn over to Eric, and he'll provide a high-level summary of the land exchange agreement.
Thanks, commissioners. To those of you on the line as well, good morning. Eric Walquist, general counsel. I guess I'd start by saying I want to echo Justin's thoughts and say thanks to the teams that have been working on this. The staff here at the district has been working, I would say, hand in glove with the city, and their staff has been great. We've had a number of good cooperative meetings. I want to recognize specifically Daniel Apple on my team, who's been doing most of the drafting here in conjunction with Steve Smith, city attorney, and the rest of the key project participants there with the city. I think where we've arrived is an agreement. It's not an easy agreement. There's lots of federal parties and different regulations, at least two or three oversight agencies, all that need to be involved in this. But I think where we've landed is a draft agreement that represents the needs of both parties. I would say we've had really good working opportunities to work through stakeholder issues as they have arisen through the project here. I'm going to go through some of the key provisions. Justin's put most of them there. We would intend, after today's public hearing and the conversation, to put the draft of the agreement on the website so that customers can see it here in its present state. Like many of these agreements and the agreements that we've done in the past, I would expect we will continue to make I-dotting and T-crossing efforts right up until the time that it's executed, but there should be no fundamental material changes of any substance between now and execution. Of course, if there are any of those that do arise, we'll get them back to the board's attention as soon as possible. So some of the material terms I think you're probably familiar with. We've had a lot of chats about them, but we have styled it as a land exchange agreement with multiple contingencies and obligations on both sides, with the intent really to be to facilitate the needs of both of the parties, which are subject to different, in this instance, regulatory schemes in terms of oversight, ours with FERC and then federal highways, among others, for the city project. We aren't intending to exchange any money. The land exchanges will be the consideration for the agreement, along with the obligations that the parties assume under the agreement prior to closing an exchange of titles, which we would propose by quitclaim deed. In this instance, there will be an opportunity for both sides to see and review all of the available information affecting the properties that they're going to be transferring to one another prior to that transfer as well. Some of the additional conditions and contingencies that you see here. So I don't have them on my notes this way, but we'll take them in the order of the box. So the state park housing relocation, there is housing and other property related to that housing associated with the Confluence State Park on the north side of the Wenatchee River that will be relocated. That will be one, the north, what I refer to as the north of the river property that the city will be obtaining and conveying to the district to replace that park housing, and then they will take the existing park housing as part of the project. We've worked really hard as staff for both entities, candidly, to try to address the mitigation associated with the noise and some of the other mitigative measures that have been publicly talked about on both sides by customers, by the city, by the PUD, and the commissioners specifically. Interesting, presents an interesting challenge, I would submit, particularly for lawyers who like everything nice and locked up. We don't really have a design here yet. We have a lot of visioning and certainly concept documents and a project that's defined for all of those purposes. It needs to be through today. We're incorporating a design definition into the agreement to help us with that. But the fact of the matter is, until we really get a full design, we know the property that's going to be exchanged, and specifically, it becomes a little bit difficult to be absolutely with perfect clarity able to picture what the project will look like on the ground. So we've worked with the city to gather and try to define those parameters, frankly, utilizing a lot of the public materials that have been made available by the city as part of its public conversation about its project. So you see those attached, and the customers who look online will see those attached as well. And we're going to continue to have to work with the city along the way. We've tried to develop some procedures within the agreement itself to make sure that we are cooperatively working together early on in the process as we step into some of these design elements and mitigative measures so that it's not going to catch anybody by surprise. I'm confident that we'll be able to work through that. We actually have a really good model that we use with the city relative to the franchise agreement that helps us plan cooperatively up front. We then can share information and see projects coming down the road. That's worked very well. I know our staff is very appreciative of it. Don't see any reason we wouldn't continue to work through the cooperative processes relative to this project as well. We do have some wells, two of them on the property that we utilize. Those need to be relocated, and the city will do that relocation and pay for those among the other mitigative measures. None of us have perfect clarity in terms of what's under the ground right now, so we've allowed in the agreement for some alternative ways to get water there in the event we're not successful in completely replacing the volume that those wells produce. So we will, as Justin mentioned, have to decommission the existing pedestrian bridge. The city's planning the new bridge as part of its project, which it will own. Talk a little bit about O&M here in a minute, but that does, as Justin mentioned, require a permit for FERC for the non-project purpose. Presently, we don't anticipate any challenges with that. We have that along with the other license amendment document Justin mentioned, which would be the document or the process pursuant to which we request FERC approval of all of this agreement. We actually need to move expeditiously in those FERC submissions, particularly the initial amendment request, so that we can not only facilitate the city's project, which has some timelines and some need for forward momentum there, but we also need to make sure that we get that in and considered in a timely fashion with FERC so that we don't end up in a situation where that application gets then swept into the relicensing for the Rock Island project, which could delay any decision from FERC substantially, frankly, measured in years. So that's, assuming the agreement is executed, that's probably one of the first things that we'll be working on at that point in time. So the utilities relocation, the next block, there are utilities there, both transmission, distribution, perhaps others. Those need to be evaluated and plans made for relocation. Cities agreed to pay for that. Where those assets need to be relocated based upon project requirements, the city's project, but also one nuance, the commission knows, and I'm sure the public does, that the district has assets on its own property, on property of others that we hold pursuant to easement, and then we put assets as well, like most municipal utilities in the public right-of-way pursuant to franchise with the city. We have, I mentioned earlier, a really good franchise, in my opinion, with the city. Allows us to work pretty cooperatively. Where our assets presently require relocation and they are existing within that franchise, not on easement or owned property, the city will not be paying for the relocation of those assets. Those pursuant to the franchise where we have assets within their rights of way and they need us to move them because of projects, frankly, precisely like this one, then they have the ability to ask us to locate or relocate at our expense. And the consideration for that is they don't charge us a lot to be there in the first instance. So we're going to be working through that. We, again, because of the lack of a complete design, don't know exactly which assets are going to be relocated and to what extent, but we have tried to put a process into the agreement so that we can work with the city and see those things coming as we move through design. The property exchange we talked about the north of the river property. There's also some property that we've been talking about as depicted in the pictures down closer to the Horan Natural Area. And then there's, of course, what I think of as the trail proper property where we'll be exchanging, giving to the city the property where the trail presently exists for the most part associated with their project and then receiving from them a relocated trail property to the extent we don't already own that. We do continue to work with the city and will continue throughout the project toward the city on art, aesthetics, other educational opportunities. We have some educational placards out there. Those will be relocated or replaced at city expense. In addition, we don't have any specific commitments from either side about what that additional thinking and looking might turn into in terms of art, aesthetics, educational, but both parties are properly committed to thinking and working together to help put those out there for the benefit of both of our constituents. The landscaping plan, this has been a topic of conversation. We have a process built in where we're going to work with the city to develop an appropriate landscape plan that meets the needs of both parties, but also is consistent with conversations that have been going on. Again, that specific plan will have to, I would say, grow out of that design when we finally know what it looks like, but we have the concepts in the agreement. Property cleanup, this is just an obligation, both parties to provide clean property to the others. And then the operation and maintenance of the trail system, we have actually talked quite a bit with the city and also state parks about how we're going to continue to operate and maintain the trail system after it's relocated and rebuilt. And I think where we've landed is a good compromise. We We plan to continue to maintain the trail portions as we have, including the bridge, make those arrangements. We will develop an operation and maintenance agreement with the city that sets those out, but didn't really see a lot of benefit to anyone for having the city come in and maintain a very little short portion of the trail that we're already taking care of. So we plan to continue to meet that commitment to the customers, and the city will continue to maintain its commitment to address any capital needs or significant repair needs for the properties that that they're going to be owning, particularly the walking bridge. So I would say that is, for the most part, the summary of the agreement. Of course, some of the things that are not stated in this but are implicit in the agreement is we need to obtain all of those state, federal, and other approvals the city has been seeking related to its project, and it's been sort of diligently working through obtaining all of those approvals. Haven't got them all, but the agreement carries contingencies that as those come in and are ticked off, then we check that box and we move to the next, and hopefully we'll get through this in a way that satisfies all of those contingencies, and we can move forward with a successful project. Some of ours include FERC and others that we've already spoken about. So stakeholder engagement has been, as Justin has illustrated, pretty comprehensive, actually, by both the city and the district in this instance. For the district purposes, I would just let the board know that that will not stop going forward. From the district's perspective, we still have to develop and sustain a record that we would submit to FERC in support of our license amendment and non-project permitted use permit. We fully intend to rely upon all the good work of the city in that, but don't know exactly what FERC will require. Other stakeholder comments might be that we'll need to address along the way. But just wanted to assure the board that staff's aware of those processes and will continue to work diligently on getting all of those approvals and checking those boxes. And in doing that, we'll continue to work hand in glove with the city staff on it. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Happy to have conversations after the meeting as well, if you have any that you'd like to run by me or get clarity on. And then we'll try to, as I said, try to keep you abreast of any changes. At this point, though, I really don't expect any. I expect only I-dotting and T-crossing to make sure we continue to maximize the benefit of the agreement for both parties to the extent we can. So that's what I have today, and I'll turn it back to Justin unless the board has any questions for me.
Thank you, Eric. So because that agreement that Eric just spoke of has significant detail and specificity, staff does recommend approval of the land exchange agreement. Believe that it meets hopefully the goals and the intentions of what we heard from our customer owners and what we've heard from you. We do plan on presenting to the board a resolution on March 20th for your consideration. This resolution, if approved, would authorize the general manager to sign the land exchange agreement. We would then carry out some supporting actions, including sending a letter to Federal Highways Administration within 10 days of said agreement signing, where we would indicate our support for the project and that the 4F considerations have been adequately met. That will allow the federal government to issue their final environmental determination, which is anticipated sometime this spring. And as Eric mentioned, this agreement, as much time and effort has went into it, this is in many ways just the beginning, because the hard part now will be, we'll be walking through this process for the next several years in terms of design and construction, and acknowledging some of the unknowns that Eric just mentioned, ensuring that we have a project at the end of the day that is reflective of the agreement, of your desires, and the mutual desires of the district and the city. But with that, if there are no commissioner comments at this time for staff, we do have some time reserved for the city of Wenatchee.
Okay. City of Wenatchee.
I guess that's me. Good morning, Frank Kuntz, Mayor of the City of Wenatchee. Thank you for giving us a few minutes. I'm not going to take very much time. There's some folks here in the audience that need to be places very quickly, so I will just take a moment to thank not only the PUD staff, Kirk and and Eric and their team, my team, Laura, Gloria, our city attorney, and our city engineering staff have been working, as you know, a long time on this particular agreement. It's been 21 months since we got the infra award from the federal government. So I think that is the time when we all sort of went, I think we have a project. And this has been quite a little issues over the last 19 or 20 months or whatever it's been, but I was involved in a couple of the meetings. The cooperation was great amongst the staff. So I think we've come to an agreement that's, that both parties can be pleased with and hopefully can move this process forward. As Justin said, this is really just the beginning. We've got 5 or 6 years of construction design. We do have a term sheet. We haven't signed it yet with the federal government, so we're really close on that. Looking at the $85 million, it's in the governor's budget. It's in the Senate transportation budget. We have all assurances that it will be passed when the budget is passed in the next month or two. So I would say in 2 weeks from now is a huge day for this project. And then getting the budget passed in Olympia in April will also be a huge day for this project. And I'm looking forward to the time when I can look at everybody and say, yes, we have a project. And yes, we can move forward. And I know it's been a long time working through these issues, but hopefully we've got something that works for both parties. That's really all I've got to say. I'm going to, Wes Matheson is going to speak as part of the public speaking. I know he's got an engagement he's got to get to, so I want to be in deference to Wes being here today. So I will be done. Unless you have any questions for me. If not, I'd like to get some of the public to comment on our behalf.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Ladies.
Thank you. Welcome.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Wes Matheson. I'm the president and one of the owners at Stimelt Growers. We're at 3135 Warehouse Way. I also live in Sunny Slope, which is on 4227 Crestview Street.
That was the test. You had to remember your own address.
I want to follow procedures here. Anyway, I'm going to speak really about Stimelt and my participation in this project, going back many, many years working with the traffic studies. And I would just say that this is hard. This is really thinking about the genius of the and versus the tyranny of the or. And our office is right there along the Capitol Loop Trail. Every Friday during the winter, and then every Friday and Wednesday, I jog on the loop trail. I've seen the moose 3 times. I've named the pheasant out there in the Horan Wildlife Reserve, and it's very peaceful. I love to hear the water. I love the Horan Natural Area, and I love this valley. And things don't stay the same. And so I'm here to speak on behalf of the hundreds, over 1,000 tree fruit workers who work in the Old Station area, who can't be here today, but every day support this great valley. And the traffic studies, going back, this is many years ago, I'm kind of going from memory, but if you took just, we did an analysis of where everyone's address was for their payroll check and where they come from and kind of estimated the number of tree fruit people in Old Station. And if everyone were to leave and come to work at the same time, it would be 45 minutes on North Wenatchee Avenue. That's just this one segment of the population. You know, this Confluence Parkway is really about safety. And things don't stay the same. You know, we got the tree fruit industry continues to grow. Your guys' headquarters is moving out there. Sunny Slope continues to grow. People commuting to Chelan back and forth. People coming to Wenatchee. All this stuff has an impact. The Wenatchee bridges are a constraint to our community. It's a safety hazard. And you guys have done a brilliant job identifying that. This decision, as I said, is hard. It's the genius of the and versus the tyranny of the or. And this is the biggest project since the Oda-Bashan Bridge. You know, the Oda-Bashan Bridge was put in just after I was born, so it's going to be hitting 50 here pretty soon. But I think you've got the right people working on it. The right information has gone into that. The amount of research and the compellingness of this project is very impressive. Will it change things? Yeah, it will. But I trust the people involved in this that it will provide a great mechanism of safety for our community, and it will provide a continued great resource for the Apple Capitol Loop Trail, and that the Huron National Wildlife Preserve will continue to be great. So anyway, that concludes my comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Wes.
Thanks, Wes.
Any questions for me? Thank you.
Have you gotten sprayed by a skunk when you jog the loop trail?
I'm running now.
Any other public comment? Mr. Durock.
So good morning. I'm Richard Durock. I'm the general manager over at Link Transit, which is 2700 Euclid, so on the Confluence Parkway area, and I live in Sunny Slope as well. So this is important. What I wanted to share with you today is that the Confluence Project is as much a transit project as a road project. This is absolutely critical, probably the most important thing that Link has looked at in the last 30 years in terms of movement. And I want to share what those impacts are, because I think that has gotten lost sometimes in the conversations about where we're at. So it's a 2.5-mile bypass from North Wenatchee Avenue. It's actually 0.6 miles shorter. That may not sound like a lot, but it's an enormous amount of miles when you operate as many vehicles as we do up and down the corridor. It has 7 fewer traffic signals, no cross streets. It actually has 4-minute faster travel time. Speed limits are the same on both sides, but without the lights and without the cross streets, you actually get through it about 4 minutes faster than you do going the other direction. Since the wages we pay our employees are 75% of the cost, time is absolutely critical in terms of what the impacts of this are. It also dramatically improves reliability, which is one of the biggest impediments we have to on-time performance in our system is North Wenatchee Avenue. We run 253 buses a day through the corridor on North Wenatchee Avenue, 191 in service, 62 that are moving between our operating base and the downtown where they start in service. Paratransit vehicles, our Link Plus vehicles, about 30 daily trips go across the Wenatchee River Bridge. And we're in the midst of a 25% expansion of that, so this will be closer to 320 vehicles running up and down that corridor every day. What that works out to is the use of Confluence Parkway for our what's called deadhead, our movement of our empty vehicles downtown, and our commuter buses from Leavenworth and Chelan would use Confluence Parkway. Our locals would stay on North Wenatchee Avenue, but that will save us over 3,000 annual service hours due to the shorter distance. About 12,000 hours we saved on North Wenatchee Avenue because of less congestion, because of the split movement. And that works out to us, and this is 2019 dollars because this is what my last audit numbers were, is about $1.8 million. At the current cost, it's closer to about $2.2 million. That's 10% of our budget. So that is a significant operational savings by having this service in place. That's also about the cost of our service to Chelan. And if we don't have this project, what happens is the congestion will occur, and we will just have to keep adding buses to maintain the existing timing, and the routes get longer, they become less attractive to individuals. You don't actually generate any additional ridership for the investment. So that money essentially just gets wasted in the community. We have to pay it, so we've got to pay the people to be on the vehicles, but you're not gaining anything out of the expansion our voters approved and allowed us to do more. The other benefits come out of this, it actually saves about 58,000 annual miles of movement on the vehicles. About 156,000 annual passenger travel delay hours, so that's how much time it saves the riders on the system. It reduces the peak travel time from Leavenworth by 14 minutes because we don't have to go through the mess at the north end. That shorter distance actually makes that route dramatically more attractive. 14 minutes is huge on a route that's an hour long. And this piece has been primary thing that we've been waiting for in order to do a bus rapid transit corridor from Leavenworth to Wenatchee. We know we've been slowly building highway stops out along Highway 2 to allow that to develop, but without this connection, it doesn't make any sense to put the rest of the investment in the higher frequencies to actually provide that service for the people who are reverse commuting up to work in Leavenworth, as well as the people who live in the corridor who need to get to downtown Wenatchee. So this is a critical benefit from the system from that perspective. And then I think we also need to recognize there are significant improvements for the bike commuters out there and pedestrians as well. But I like to remind people that every bus trip starts as a bike trip or a pedestrian trip. No one drives onto the bus. They all walk some distance, and most passengers actually don't drive to the bus. Park and ride is a relatively small part of what our ridership is. I use the Loop Trail to commute in the summers. I love riding my down to the office. But one of the issues is commuters don't mix well on the Loop Trail, particularly in the afternoon when it's congested. It's just a real problem. This project actually is going to be building a second bike trail on the road service itself, which will logically become the commuter trail and take the high-speed riders off of the recreational trail and give them the access. That'll connect Old Station Road to Holly Street. That's all part of the design that's been approved. And so we're actually doubling the bike capacity in the corridor, allowing the high-speed riders to separate from the congested parts of the park. And actually, I call it a beloway, essentially. I think it's a huge improvement to our community that will separate those two needs that are really incompatible on the trail today and below capacity currently. It realigns the trail to a much nicer environment. In fact, when this project was first being proposed, I sit on the Transportation Council as well, and this was part of the process. I remember saying, if we can't with a straight face say we're not improving the experience of the average user of the trail, then we shouldn't be doing this, and we need to make sure that those elements are in there. And so a big part of this is trying to make the trail experience as good as it can possibly be. Yes, there's always going to be some impacts. We need to recognize those and do as much mitigation as we can, but that's really important. We think it's going to provide an opportunity to provide direct access to Confluence State Park for the first time, because we'll be running through it. We'll have to work with you and with the park to where that location is, but currently there is no transit stop for the park. Love the fact that it's going to rewater the park, which I think is a huge improvement for the wildlife as well as everything else. And I think a lost piece that gets caught a lot is the mitigations that are being done for the roadway will actually reduce the sounds we get from the current railroad and Wenatchee River bridges. So while there will be some noise impact from the road itself, you're actually reducing the impact of the existing infrastructure. I think that's also a really important point for us to go through. So just wanted to let you know the non-motorized or other traditional travel modes benefit a lot from this project, and as it's much a transit project as a highway project. So I encourage the go forward with this project. I think the mitigations, I think we've been working in good faith to make sure that everything's out there so you can, in fact, say it will provide a better experience for people. Maybe different, but a better experience. Thank you.
I want to say thank you, Richard. You brought to light for me today some items that I hadn't heard before, and it was very, on my part, very well received. So thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Other public input?
Welcome, Sean.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sean Ballard from Ballard Ambulance, and our operation is at 1028 North Wenatchee Avenue, just down the road here. And I live in East Wenatchee at 38 19th Street Northwest. And obviously, I'm here on a public safety vein. And what we've seen, which everybody knows, is that over the last couple decades, the traffic in the North End has expanded exponentially. And we're really a regional resource. From Wenatchee, we support many small communities, including Cashmere, Antioch, Waterville, all the way up and down the valley to the tunnel up and going to Chelan, and then support as backup to the folks up in Leavenworth and several other services. And, what we've seen is just an increase in congestion in the North End. And I was thinking about the North End because, over the years we've had other places that were hot spots. The George Seller Bridge for years was the spot. And, it wasn't, almost every week that we had a rear ender accident. And then you guys have all taken the bridge, this George Seller back in the day, and you'd get one rear ender accident and then another one and then another one. And, it was always congested. And, they proposed the projects down there of expanding the, taking out the sidewalks and adding the pedestrian walkway and expanding that. And then the Fred Meyer project where they've gone past that. And, when they first proposed them, I thought, I was a little bit like, but what we've seen with those two projects and with the Eastmont extension is we've seen much safer travel down there. We see far fewer accidents. We see far fewer incidents. We see far fewer, multiple incidents at a time. And then when we do have an incident with the expanded lanes and the other places, for the traffic to go, it's allowed traffic to continue to go. It's allowed us to get in and out. And out here in the north end, that's not the case. And I was looking, reviewing a tape the other day. Our ambulance have cameras, onboard cameras. We see the back and we see the front. And last summer, during the heat, which you guys know, whenever the heat gets on there, people get that anxious feeling and you see them start to be more aggressive. But one of the rigs was just going out for a non-emergent thing. Traffic was backed up like it always is on the afternoon on North Wenatchee Avenue. And they got stopped at the light, and there was a guy behind him that was, obviously in a hurry. And when the light changed, we started going, and all of a sudden you see on the camera this truck going at a high speed around us to the right. And then he came and he lost control, hit it on the right, went just yard sailed out through there. And we didn't get any business out of it. He wasn't hurt, but we were thinking, But he blocked both lanes. And we were totally cut off from, for hours from the, he damaged the bridge out there. You'll still see the repair that's out there on the left-hand side as you're going out as you enter the Wenatchee River Bridge. And it totally blocked access for all the, number one, the citizens that were trying to get in and out of there. And then blocked, us accessing Cashmere and all those upper valley places that, that we have to go to when people are sick. And, so an alternate route and, we've seen that, the amount of traffic is not going to decrease. I mean, no matter how much we hope and wish. But, when I started out my career in the late 70s, I'd take an early morning call up the Antioch at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it would surprise you if you saw a vehicle. And now, you just, as an example, you go up Antioch at 6 o'clock in the morning, and it's bumper-to-bumper traffic coming down there for how many people live up there. And we've seen the same expansion up in Cashmere and Sunny Slope and all that. And so I know there's a lot of details to work out, but we're really supportive of an alternate route that allows, emergency services and the people access, around, that bottleneck spot and, can divert traffic when there's problems and then just spread out the traffic. And I think we'll see, as we did with the other projects, I think we'll see a lot fewer accidents and issues out there if we have an alternate, and we're very supportive of the work you're doing. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name's Mike Battis. I'm the director of Ballard Ambulance. I've been there for about 20 years. So our operation is here on the avenue, and then I'm also a resident in Cashmere. The single greatest risk that we have every single day as EMS personnel is actually driving vehicles. Sean kind of alluded to the near-miss accident we had out there on the Wenatchee River Bridge. But every single time that our crews leave the station, they're putting themselves in some degree of danger. That level of danger is exponentially increased the second that they turn their lights and sirens on. We all learned in driver's ed that you're supposed to, stop and pull to the right and yield to the emergency vehicles. I'm telling you right now that absolutely doesn't happen. You could make several comedy skits based off from the interactions we see with drivers when we turn our lights on. This concept of having a secondary point of egress and ingress on the north end is pretty impressive to us. And I think where we differ, in EMS is, you think, well, the fire service, well, they just put a station out in an old station. And then there's one on, they can strategically place them. And Ballard Ambulance can do that too, frankly. What we can't change is transporting our patients back to the hospital. Unless we're going to start stacking hospitals up on the north end of town and in East Wenatchee and in Sunny Slope, it doesn't work. So every time that we get called for service out on the north end, whether that's in some of our rural communities that rely on us or just in the industrial area out in Sunny Slope, we have to transport those people back into town. When that call is at, the 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, that's an egregious task to try to get us back into town. If you have an emergent patient and you're dealing with that bottleneck and now you have somebody's life literally, hanging in the balance, not to be too dramatic about it, but it's a true statement. you've got somebody sick and dying in the back of your ambulance and you're trying to navigate that traffic on the north end, it's pretty dangerous. And there's some definite cost to our citizens when we're putting them at that risk, and then just the simple time delay of it. So that's all I got for you today, and thanks for allowing me.
You bet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Commissioners. Brian Brett with Wenatchee Valley Fire Department. Thanks for having me here. We've been counting on this project going through ever since it was proposed. This is going to increase our public safety customer service delivery system more than anything. As our partners at Ballard alluded to, the response times with the traffic congestion is unbelievable over the past couple decades of what we see. Last year, we responded to 157 car accidents between Maple Street and the Sunny Slope area. Without a car accident, it's already congested. And now you throw a car accident in there, as Sean alluded to, the wreck there, it chokes it up for a long time. But aside from that, here in our valley, our region is the North Central Washington region for the wildland mobilization teams. And we have historically hosted the first, often the middle, and usually the season-ending large conflagration in the state right here. Our whole community is classified as an embercast zone. I've grown up here my entire life. I know a lot of you probably have as well. We used to have a green belt of orchards that protected the community from wildfire. We don't have that at all now. We have replaced that with homes right into the fuels. Over the last 5 years, we've had close to 1,000 structures threatened that we have fortunately protected, but it's a recurring theme, and it's going to continue to recur. And as a model we use in the wildfire mitigation is the PACE model. You may use it as well, primary, alternate, contingent, emergency plans. But we need this in our transportation corridor for us to be able to do our jobs better, evacuate our public, keep ourselves safer, keep you safer, and deal with the problem we face every summer and throughout the year. Thank you so much for allowing me a time to comment. Be glad to answer any questions if the commissioners have any.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When everybody's finished, I'm going to ask my commissioners if they have questions, but do you have any right now? There's two online, two of our fellow commissioners online. I don't see any at the moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Additional public input.
We have one more citizen sent a email, asked that they could have it read. They weren't able to make it, so Justin's going to read that one.
Thank you, Commissioners. This was submitted by Bart Clennon on March 5th. I am sorry I am not in attendance today, as I wanted to be there and share my thoughts and respond to related questions you may have. But last week I tested positive for COVID. I am fully vaccinated and feeling better, but want to remain cautious so as to not expose anyone else. Below are the comments I would have shared today in person. I am a big PUD fan. As you know, there have been many great accomplishments in the last decade or so, and I really resonate with the vision of the best for the most for the longest. But as it relates to the confluence roads and bridge across the Wenatchee River, I am concerned. This must be looked at from a holistic, big picture viewpoint. We have a significant problem with traffic in North Wenatchee and the north entrance into and out of town. And the issue will get worse once the PUD relocates their facilities from Fifth Street. The morning and evening traffic volumes and related slow movement must be addressed. This was extensively studied, and the current plan was selected out of several options. We have significantly over $100 million of already committed dollars at risk if we don't proceed now. I care very much about our parks, but this is bigger than those parkways. And the money involved from your perspective is minimal, so I ask you to do what is obviously the best for the most for the longest. Approve this today and get it moving. Bart Clennon.
Thank you. Any other public input? Hearing none, commissioners, there's no recommendation for action today. It'll be in 2 weeks is the recommendation, but are there any questions of my fellow commissioners for staff or any of the public going forward? Gary.
Thank you, Randy. And this is a question directed, if Mr. DeRock is still there.
Yeah, it had he's to still do here. With,
thank you. So, Richard, this, if you could bring a little clarity, you had mentioned early in your discussion that there would be deadhead buses using it to get to the bus center, bus corral in town. And then you also mentioned that there's going to be bus stops along the parkway. Can you kind of explain and elaborate on that?
Sure.
There's going to be both?
Yes, because our regional bus service, so the routes 21 and 22 and 28, which are the routes that serve Leavenworth, Cashmere, Enneatt, and Chelan, will be using the parkway as their primary access point. We don't like them to do local stops along Wenatchee Avenue because they're trying to get the commuters into downtown faster anyway, so that works really well for them. But that then provides transit options for the outlying communities, the people who are working in Old Station, for example. When we did some modeling, it looked like we'll be able to provide transfer-free trips to access the Stamilt properties and the CMI properties along the highway there. Because of Confluence, it changes the way the routing works on those routes. The local buses that serve the Walmart area will continue to stay on North Wenatchee Avenue. So we'll have about, of those 253 in-service trips, about 120 will be on Confluence, and about 200 will be on North Wenatchee Avenue in service. So that'll provide probably service to the whatever stop we're able to put into the park. Oh, that work out to about every 15 minutes over the mid part of the day. The service drops off later in the evening and the morning, but provide good access for the first time. And then the deadhead buses, those we won't put into service unless there's some good reason to do it, because again, time is money, and so getting them down to where the routes start makes more sense to do that on direct. But we have at times actually put them into service if that'll provide an actual connection. There's no reason not to start them at the operating base and run them in service as a shuttle type of thing. So if we saw that as a work trip need or something, we might convert them to that. But right now they're just duplicating other routes, so we run them empty.
Thank you, Richard. Appreciate you explaining that.
Sure, not a problem.
Richard, while you're there, mm-hmm. Gary raised a question in my mind. Have you done any analysis on with this type of a change how that might impact ridership to Stamilt or CMI by the workforce in and out of work? What is the potential of reduction of traffic?
Well, from South Wenatchee, that has always required transfers. We put a new service design that has taken that transfer out, but the routes really don't connect other than right at the Apple Commission facility. There's a stop there. We've got a... In fact, our capital plan has us putting in a flashing beacon with the city to try and make that a safer crossing, because that's part of the reason people don't commute. Talking to them is why they avoid the bus. But so we expect to do a lot. We talked to Stamilt about working back when we were doing fares. We had them as a talking about a partner for Whitship, because they estimate about, what was it? I think it was less than 10% of their workers take the bus in. But where we've made a conscious effort connection, so Crunch Pack up in Cashmere, we're transporting the better part of 35% of the workforce
really?
To Crunch Pack every day, and we think we could do the same thing as with the better stops and the better infrastructure that this will bring. So I have high expectations that we're going to see a significant increase in the movement, and in fact, it was part of the environmental documentation was that we're going to be providing underserved communities better access to the employment opportunities by this project.
And a commensurate reduction in traffic congestion.
That should be the result as well, and that's part of the real positives. And then I think there's going to be the running time. Right now it's 53 minutes to run from Leavenworth to Columbia Station as running time. The bridge by itself will reduce the running time by 14 minutes, so take it from 53 down to about 38 minutes, which starts getting close to what is driving. And then the BRT project will reduce it another 12 minutes of running time, which makes it the same time as driving your car, Leavenworth and back. That will get commuters to take the system, because they won't take a route that's longer. I mean, time is money for everybody, and if you can get the bus time to be comparable to driving, people will make that choice. We have the parking facilities in the corridor to make that happen. So I'm very optimistic this is going to be a fundamental shift in how people access the community and has a long-term benefit that goes way beyond what we think just the car movement is. Reducing congestion will probably increase some car trips as well, but I think we have a real opportunity here to do a fundamental shift in how transit's used.
Thank you. So if there's no additional public input, any additional commissioner questions? You're recommending that we be prepared to vote on this in 2 weeks?
Correct. And we're more than happy to answer any questions or spend time discussing any of the elements of the agreement between now and then.
Okay. Very good.
Mr. President, may I?
Yes, you bet.
I just want to thank everyone for coming and giving your testimony or comments. It's hugely helpful to see it from a safety perspective. And so thank you for taking the time.
Thanks again. All right.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Move into quarterly energy resources update.
Yeah, with us is Mike Bradshaw, Janet Jaspers, and Brandon Carnahan is here as well.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Mike Bradshaw, Director of Energy Structuring and Trading. With me is Janet Jaspers, Director of Energy Planning and Trading. We're here to present the Energy Resources Quarterly Board Update. Do I hear? Okay, got it. Okay, why we're here. As I mentioned, to provide an update on the wholesale revenue forecast, as well as a 2022 look back, an update on what's going on in the Western power markets, and touch on operations and planning, including where forward prices are, and an update on Lake Chelan. Some of the key points to take away is that we had a very strong 2022 energy-related revenues. They came in at $222 million, which is $114 million better than budget. Primary drivers of that is the increase in wholesale energy prices and the provisions in our for retained surplus proceeds in our long-term power contracts. Also, part of the Western Resource Adequacy Program, which has been stood up, the tariff was filed with FERC back in August, and that was accepted last month. And then an update on the day-ahead market initiatives. The two that are out there right now are the Southwest Power Pool Markets Plus, and there is a funding agreement that's been signed to keep that on track, as well as the CAISO board approved the Western day-ahead market, or the EDAM. So both market initiatives are moving forward. Looking at the electric revenue forecast, quite a bit of information here. You may have seen this last quarterly update, but I'll kind of run through it. From left to right here, on the far left you see is the 22 budget. So that was the forecast. At the bottom is yellow, is the retail revenue forecast. In the kind of that red color up top is the revenue from the long-term hydropower contracts, gray being off-system energy sales, and then purple being other, which is described down below on the box of the slide, the bottom of the slide. And of course, blue is the energy planning and trading wholesale revenue forecast. So looking from left to right, budget was, as you can see, the budget versus the actuals, the second one column over, quite a bit above the budget forecast. Looking to the right of that is 2023 and beyond, and there's some comparison lines here. That green line is the forecast at budget. So as you can see, the tops of every column is well above the green. And then the prior quarterly update, the top of the bars were at that red line. So most years in the future above, 2023 a bit below. Something to note also, this is the forecast as of December 2022, where 2023 water supply forecast was really unknown. So it was using average. Since then, it's been pretty dry in our basin, and so the water forecast supply is closer to 80%. So right now with this graph, that is a bit lower in the 2023 slide. All right. Getting into the details, the 2022 wholesale revenue and other energy-related revenue. Just to draw your eye to the bottom right-hand number, that's the variance of budget for the entire amount. So that's the $114 million alluded to in the previous slide. As mentioned, you can see the primarily the biggest portion of that is there on the $106.3 million, which is, the again, the retained surplus from the long-term power contracts. This slide here is an update just showing that the commitments from the district as far as energy is below the hedge limits that are set per policy. So on the far left is the fixed price positions by year. On the far right is the physical positions by year. And on both graphs, there's that red line on top, which is the limit, are the limits per policy. And so you can see in each year there on the left, there is available surplus, as indicated by the gray box on the top of each column there. And then on the right is the same. You have the gray box plus a hatched box, which is for index sales. So the takeaway here is that in all years, the energy commitments are below the limits in both the fixed price and the physical positions. This year hasn't changed since last quarterly update. These are the fixed price size contracts we have starting in 2023, going out a few years. Typical fashion, they step down as we typically execute one per year. We do have plans. We are March 29th having an auction, so hopefully we'll be adding to this if it's successful. And that would start in 2024 and go through 2028. So that being the 2024 up to the 25 percentile, which is where we've been historically. With that, I'll hand it over to Janet.
Thanks, Mike. Good morning, commissioners. As Mike kind of covered real quickly in highlights, we do have quite a few changes in the markets lately. Resource adequacy has been a big topic, and it seems like there's always some meeting almost every single day on it. So we have joined forces with the Restaurant Resource Adequacy Program, or we call it RAP. One of their big news items, which Mike kind of touched on, was they had FERC approve their tariff. It's a big piece of work, so congratulations to them on getting that approved by FERC. Then there is the kind of all of this participants, and you can see on the map here, the dark blue are just some of the areas that are participants in the program. So everyone needs to decide by the end of May, like when they're joining the binding program. So you can join non-binding, and then you get to actually decide when you join binding and have to kind of meet all of the resource adequacy requirements and make yourself subject to possible penalties if you don't meet those. So we'll be evaluating and deciding by the end of May when we'll actually commit. On the lower part of the slide, we're talking about short-term markets. We say markets, well, we're actually already have some bilateral markets, but this is really talking about organized markets where you bid in with a bunch of companies and you get awarded just in a very organized way. So, anyway, multiple utilities, including the district, are funding this next development phase of the organized markets with the SPP contingent. On the other hand, we have that kind of opposing, there's the two different markets, the California ISO extended day ahead market is heading to for approval, so it's almost kind of a race between the two right now. And then also kind of governance of the California day-ahead market has been an issue for a lot of people. And so the California state legislature is considering some changes to entice more people to join their markets.
Janet, what kind of direct impact would those last two potentially have on us?
So I think that the very last one probably would have the biggest impact. I think there's people opposed to the California day ahead market just because of California governance and some of their rules. We just got home from a conference and people were kind of talking about, I think it's enough soon enough yet to be determined. Potentially they could make it partway consensus there. I don't know if they'll be enough to convince everyone. And I thought one of the comments that I've heard there too is, oh, all of their staff are really already California state residents. And so even if you make that governance change, you still probably have a bias within the staff. Like, oh, what kind of procedures do you come up with? What kind of rules do you take up to the top? So, and they said, oh, it'd probably take 8-10 years to kind of get rid of that California bias. So, so it's still kind of, I don't know what the legislature will actually pass. There's some definitely comments on that. Does labor support it? Does labor not? How can we get something passed? So I think the short answer is we're not really sure. But
yeah, that's probably a good answer. We don't know.
So we always kind of cover some natural gas prices, just for a little context on how that relates to electricity prices. So daily natural gas prices are shown on this chart for the last 11 months. Very, very volatile. So four of these hubs are in the west, and then the Henry hub is that one kind of in the south in Louisiana. So the one in the south is this kind of golden orange, school bus orange. And so natural gas in the west, we had these horrendous spikes up to $45 per MMBTU, and it's really come back off. So we really haven't seen price excursions similar to that kind of worldwide with Nord Stream. Pipeline from Russia into Germany being blown up has a big impact. Prices in Europe are really high. It's been putting pressure here to export liquefied natural gas, and so some price support, but you can see Henry Hub still has remained really low. Kind of at this conference, there was a lot of chatter. What happened? Is there something's going on? And kind of to have that supply demand going on. Definitely a lot of demand. We had some really cold temperatures across the West during that time frame. So I think there's maybe a couple of people trying to investigate. Should have the spikes been as high as they are? And then this is a slide that we normally have. Last quarter, when we gave you the update, the price was $6.31 per MMBTU. The recent look is $2.24, so about a 65% drop in just a quarter. Kind of unheard of price movements. January and February across the U.S., the temperatures have been fairly mild. I know in the West, you saw the big spikes. That was mostly in December, but kind of across the rest of the U.S., a pretty mild winter, and then also a big inventory gain. So people are putting a lot of gas into storage, and thus the huge decrease in price. Just to take that last chart is what is shown in the yellow box to give you a little kind of a more historical look here, going back to 2002. So the price spikes really, and this is just at Henry Hub. This is, remember, that was the line. That was the school bus orange at the bottom. So prices were kind of at their 14-year peaks back in that time frame. And then now we're almost at historical lows again. So lots of volatility in natural gas pricing, which also has an impact on electricity prices. So on these curves, it's always kind of amazing. So to me, across the bottom, we have the years going out into 2028. Up along the y-axis is dollars per megawatt hour for prices for it's the flat forward prices. At budget time, which was back at the end of October, was this gray dashed line. Then on January 11th, was this kind of this point in time where we sync up with the financial reports and both of us kind of present at that time period. So it's kind of 6 week difference in time between budget and January 11th. So for 2023, the gray, which is at budget, kind of that flat mid-sea price was $89.16 for the annual strip. On January 11th, $106.94. So huge price movements that we're seeing in the market. Mike just looked up kind of what it would be this past Friday. And it was $101.86.
Really?
So lots of volatility in wholesale prices.
Yeah, just real quick, too, just for your reference, we don't have the backcast or how it looks historically, but kind of average energy prices, $30 to $40.
Yeah.
Spikes, $60. Mm-hmm. So to see multiple years of the forward curve out up near $100 is remarkable.
And switching to Lake Chelan elevation, and we always kind of compare it to average. I don't think we've ever had an average year, but we always compare it to average. So this year, we're drafting down. The solid green line is the current year's elevation, and we're right on the average dry target curve, so in a really good spot. We actually, John Wasniewski just published the March 1st Lake Chelan runoff, which is for April 1st through July 31st, and 79% of normal. And I think he emailed that out. If you didn't get that, we can get you on the list. But I think kind of family and friends that are like, what's the snowpack? And I say, 79% of normal. I go, what? Just because I think at our houses, it's been closer to 150%.
But you have Olalla Canyon.
Yes. We've blown so much snow this year. It was snowing when I left this morning.
I can vouch for that one.
And even on the Columbia, we're closer to 80% of them. So 79% of normal, which we do have the dry curve. One thing we have is a double unit outage this spring. So starting on April 10th, we have one unit out for 2 weeks, one unit out for 6 weeks. And so we're going to be filling pretty fast because we won't have any ability to generate. And so with the orange shaded area is... trace years, kind of about 40 trace years, kind of around that 79% of normal runoff forecast. So, and depending on if we have an early runoff or late runoff, we'll be above this dry average curve, but it's kind of hard to say how much without knowing what the crystal ball has for the temperatures in April and May. And we will do another snow survey at the end of March and do, get boots on the ground and just do those ground truths to make sure it's correct. And so that's planned in about 4 weeks. And at that time, John will put out another official runoff forecast. Oh, in summary, really strong energy-related revenues, and Mike had pointed those out. Lots of work on resource adequacy and organized markets have been going on. And so I'll open it up for questions.
Commissioners, any questions? It'll be interesting to see what happens with California independent system operator, if anything.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Well, there she is. I didn't see you back there, Heather.
Hi. I'm a better door than window.
Next presentation is Heather Ireland here for a 2023 internal loan update. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning. Okay, there we go. Good morning, commissioners. I am Heather Ireland, the Director of Treasury here at the District, and this morning I'm going to talk to you about some action items in the future, not today. Today is information only. To provide you some background for a future request I'll be back for in 2 weeks. There we go. So I will be talking about internal loans today, and to cover just a preview of what I'm going to talk about, I'm going to start with what our internal funding needs are to get an understanding of where we need money and what our internal funding sources are, where we have money. And then also we'll talk about internal loan mechanics, which is just how we get the funds where we need them to be, and recommendations and timeline for when I'll be back. So to kick things off with what our funding needs are, just kind of wanted to highlight, I think pretty much everybody's aware, but just to cover again, we have some really substantial asset investments that the district is doing. We've been very focused on reinvestment in our assets to ensure they're at the right quality and production level for our customers in the long term. And as we continue to make those substantial investments, specifically at the large hydro facilities, Rocky Reach and Rock Island, we do have a need for some internal funding. Those capital plans for Rocky Reach and Rock Island over the next 2 years alone are estimated to be at approximately $195 million. And our long-term power sales contracts do provide a source of funding so that we can use pay-as-you-go financing for a portion of those assets. However, in years where we have really large investments, that pay-as-you-go funding is not enough to cover the entire capital plan. And that's as the contracts were intended. We wanted to be able to fund a portion of our asset investment along the way, but they were not crafted to fund the entire investment in our capital assets. It fluctuates every year. As we have lower capital needs, we're able to fund a higher portion. As we have higher capital needs, we're able to fund a smaller portion. We're anticipating for the 2023-2024 timeframe to be able to fund about 50% of our hydro capital investments with those pay-as-you-go funds from the long-term contracts. So since we do have that funding need, that's why we'd come to the board at this time of year to discuss, well, we do have a funding need, but don't we have a really strong cash position here at the district? Looking at the district as a whole, that is true. We are in really good shape. It's just that cash isn't necessarily in the accounting system that exists for the Rocky Reach and Rock Island hydros where the funding need is. So where are those funds sitting? We have a couple of different locations. One of them is the financing facilities system. It is an accounting system here at the district. We treat it kind of as an internal bank. It's the system we utilize when we go out and seek external financing sources. To be able to more efficiently look at the district as a whole on a combined basis. We that are able to take those external funds that we're able to secure and allocate them back to the individual systems that need funding. That creates loan transactions between internal systems, and the financing facility system is how we account for those and manage those. It does optimally support our ability to seek the right balance for external funding for the district as a whole, and not have to issue or try and secure small external borrowings for each individual system here at the district. Another source of internal funding is the distribution system. We've heard a few times over the last month that the 2022 financial results were very strong for the district. And the distribution system, in light of that, has been able to build substantial cash balances over the last few years. Those cash reserves that the distribution system has are earmarked for many specific purposes, like O&M, our rate stabilization funds, and also construction within the distribution system itself. But we also have reserves in excess of those forecast needs in the distribution system. Since the distribution system has excess cash, but the hydro systems need cash, we can use a funding mechanism called an internal loan to move money from one system to another. Anytime we do an internal loan, that does need board approval, so that's why I'm talking to you today to discuss the mechanism so that you'll have the information available when that request comes in. Really, all an internal loan is it's our accounting tool to match funds from where they are to where they're needed. It is a loan from one system to the other, and we establish a principal and interest repayment schedule so that the funds can be repaid over time. It does align with our board-affirmed debt philosophy and planning strategies. Our first priority is to utilize available unrestricted reserves when they're available, and that allows us to view external bond issuances from a more strategic planning process. When is it in the district's best interest to seek external funds, or when we have needs for those, but not that we have to just because one accounting system needs funds? There's a lot of benefits for internal loan process for our customer owners. One of them is that it does support our debt leverage and coverage metrics. It allows us to have a lower level of overall external debt, which keeps our debt service costs low and allows us to minimize our interest expense that we're paying external parties. It also allows us to leverage those unrestricted funds here at the district that may be earning a lower rate of return and apply them towards those value-added assets that we're trying to invest in. For 2023, we have done some internal analysis. We have a working group here at the district that we call our ALCO committee. It's our Asset Liability Committee, Matching Committee. And we evaluate different funding needs for the district, different market conditions, and try to come up with our best recommendations. For 2023, we are proposing a two-year capital funding loan for the hydro projects. That would be a loans, one to Rocky Reach and one to Rock Island, from our financing system, which is that internal banking accounting system. And the terms of those loans are governed by our long-term power sales contracts. We have some specific requirements within those that govern how we loan funds to the internal systems, and so we'd be following those. We would also propose what we're going to refer to as a bridge loan from the distribution system to the financing system. This would allow us to utilize those funds that have built up in the distribution system and get them to the hydros to keep investing in our assets. It leverages those funds with some more flexible terms than were allowed under the power sales contracts. It allows us to structure the bridge loan in the best interest of the district, not necessarily to the letter of the power sales contracts. There are some impacts to the long-term power purchasers, including the district. The district's distribution system is a long-term power purchaser from the Rocky Reach and Rock Island Hydros. Those cost-plus contracts are impacted because a share of those principal and interest schedules for the internal loans are repaid by the purchasers over time. There are also are some contract adders that do increase when internal loan balances increase. We will provide a courtesy notice to the power purchasers so that they have some advanced awareness for their budgeting purposes that there will be an increase to costs. We've most recently done this process in 2021, and we also did this in 2019, so it's fairly familiar at this point in time with our contacts. So to talk specifically about those terms of what they would actually look like and what you'll see coming as a recommendation in the resolution to follow would be for the hydro loans, a resolution on March 20th to be considered. For those contracts, it would have a 25-year term on that internal loan. Payments would be made monthly under those contracts. The interest rate would actually be set on March 31st, the effective date of the loan. We will rely on input from our external investment bank to provide an index market rate. The contracts do specify that that index market rate is based on a AA credit taxable interest rate at 110%. So it's per the power sales contracts, we set that as our standard to recognize that if we were seeking external funding for the hydros, we would likely use a taxable market rate. So this is representative of that. And to compensate for some of the additional administrative and overhead costs of debt issuance, it's 110% of that rate. As of year end, that estimated rate was around 6%. So it's quite possible that we might see something near that on March 31st when we actually set the rate. And the amounts that we're proposing for the Rocky Reach system would be not to exceed $20 million, and for the Rock Island system, not to exceed $75 million. These amounts are pretty similar to the amounts we loaned in 2019 and 2021. So we've been in that high investment arena for those hydros for a few years now. For the distribution loan to the financing system, that would also be considered by resolution from the board. We do have a little bit more flexibility in these terms. The board did adopt in 2013 a resolution to give us some parameters around internal loans, and we would seek to mirror those terms, which would be a 20-year schedule with options for prepayment. We would, looking out 20 years in the future, we anticipate that that's the schedule we would likely follow. But as our internal forecasts and results change, there might be an opportunity to retire that loan early. That interest rate would also be set on March 31st, again, using our external investment banker to provide that index rate. But it would be set at a tax-exempt market rate because we're doing an internal loan to ourselves, which is more aligned with our distribution type of credit we would seek. It would also be that 20 years again, and it would not be at that additional adder amount of 110%. At year end, that rate was estimated around 4.2%, so it's likely we might see something around that range as well. And that amount would be not to exceed $70 million. That's approximately the need we feel is appropriate to continue to fund the financing system, but not in excess of what those needs are. It's also an amount that the distribution system has an adequate fund to supply and still maintain strong reserves within the distribution system to accomplish their own capital plans. From a timeline perspective, the next 2 weeks would be provided for commissioner questions and accomplishing some power purchaser outreach. We would also then come back on March 20th to request the board's adoption of a resolution to confirm those loans. And then we would actually account for those and issue them on March 31st. And then as an additional just note, I will be back later this year with some potential additional recommendations for internal loans related to the acquisition of the Shaston Water District. And that actual request will come in based on that project timeline. So as that project moves forward this year, you would expect to see me back at some point with that separate request. Okay. Questions, additional information I can provide?
Commissioners, any questions? I had one that, you know, it came to me during your presentation, and you may not have an answer right now. Tax-exempt bonds. Did we do some fairly recently as it related to our service center?
Yes, good memory. We did in 2020, we did do a bond issue right at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. We issued $103 million of new money, and those funds were used for distribution projects and also construction of the service center, and that was tax-exempt money. Yes.
Okay. We made some people happy.
Yeah. Everybody really likes to buy our bonds, so.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Is a very efficient use of resources for the district.
Anybody else have any questions? Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heather.
So there's no public present that I can see. I anticipate that Kirk has anticipated we're finishing early and has brought some manager items into play.
You're good.
Go for it.
Is that okay? Okay. like to invite Jared Watts up. Just pleased to introduce Jared to you all as our new safety director. Jared joins us as of last Monday, so he's been here a week. This is his second week on the job, and would love to have an opportunity for you all to meet him and for him to introduce himself to you all. And we're just pleased to have him here. Jared is an outstanding candidate. He's got a passion for safety and human and organizational performance. So just really good fit for our organization, and we're just thrilled to have him here. So Jared, if you wouldn't mind, just there's two members of the board that are actually on the iPad there remotely, Commissioner Arsenault and Commissioner McKenna, so they can see you. And then two in the room, obviously. So welcome, Jared.
Welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
The picture
much.
Appears to be turned off right now.
Mine is turned off?
I can see him on mine.
Yeah, you can see him.
Oh, I'm looking up there. I should be looking down here. Okay. Yeah, got it.
Right. So just maybe you could share a few words about yourself. And
yeah, so I'm Jared Watts. I'm really quite excited to be here. I've been coming to Wenatchee quite a bit for what I would consider quite a bit for about the last 5 years. My former company is a mining company. Actually, both my former companies were mining companies. So I spent the start of my career in gold mining as both a safety, industrial hygienist, so like occupational health, in environmental type roles and in operations type roles with them. And I got to travel the entire world and realize that the favorite place for me to be was home with my family. And so my former company, I got to travel up here. We mined things like diatomaceous earth. Mm-hmm. And there's there's a diatomaceous earth deposit. And we would mine that so people could filter, you know, grape juice, wine, beer, all sorts of stuff, use it as pesticide. And that was my first introduction to Wenatchee. And I always thought, this is a pretty remarkable place. I'd love to live here someday. And so then, you know, now I'm here. Working for Chilean PUD, and I'm quite grateful. I am quite passionate about people. I'm quite passionate about their safety. I think everyone that came to work today, both them and the people that said goodbye to them this morning, had every intention of seeing them when they come home at the end of the day, just like I know my wife and my kids do. It would be devastating for them to have me not come home, and they'd be really surprised and quite sad if I came home in a different shape than I left. I think that's the same way everybody probably left when they went, when they came in today. And I take that passion quite seriously. I think safety is of utmost importance. And when I was interviewing here, I was interviewing the team just as much as anybody else, and I could see clearly that they all had those same values, that same alignment. Yeah.
Where did you move from?
I moved from just north of Santa Barbara, California, in a town called Lompoc. So,
is there a Marine base there?
There is a military. Yeah, it's an Air Force base, Vandenberg Air Force Base. So we got to enjoy watching rockets launch with Elon Musk and his team and other rockets for the last several years.
Your own personal fireworks.
Yeah, they're quite. In fact, we saw one explode one day in the air.
Wow.
It's quite interesting.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Jared,
looking forward.
Jared, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much.
Looking forward to getting to know you better.
All right. Likewise.
Thank you, Jared. Good to have you here. Thanks. You want to do Commissioner Travel?
Or? Sure. Commissioner Travel. Lisa, I saw her sneak in.
Well, what a rendezvous with travel we had, huh?
I know. And thank you to Rebecca. She wakes up earlier than I do, so she got all of the flights are canceled messages. And so she fixed it. So I'm not taking credit for that.
Y'all still might be at the airport if it was dependent on me getting up. But,
We all have our skills. So I am working on your expense reports. Some of you I have sent messages to with questions. So if you could just check those out, that would be great. We have Laputa coming up. Zoom only meetings for March. We also have Water Committee for Commissioner Smith. Is that Zoom as well?
I don't know at this point. I believe it is, but I'm not sure.
Okay, I couldn't tell for sure.
I think it might be a hybrid, if I'm not mistaken. I will do it by Zoom.
Okay, that's what I need to know. Then we have Waputa in April. I have rooms for everyone. If you would just confirm those are the dates you wish to check in and out. They're also on your calendars for those days. We have telecom workshop for Waputa in Spokane for Commissioner Arsenault. Do you plan to attend?
Yes. Thank you. I do.
Do you want to check in the 9th and out the 10th or for a hotel?
Yeah, that would be perfect. Thank you. Okay. And I'll circle back with you after this meeting.
Okay. Sounds good. Does anyone plan on attending the NWPPA annual conference in Anchorage, May 13 to 7?
I do. Cool. I will be attending.
Sounds cold.
That's what I was thinking. So I'm thinking now why. Must be fishing. There must be fishing somewhere up there.
You know, that was the first trip I took as a commissioner with Commissioner Bowles, and it was in May for NWPPA, and it was quite nice.
Well, I hope it is this year.
It's the days are already long up there in May.
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'll follow up with you.
But you also get up before I go to bed sometimes.
We're all on different schedules. A strategic planning meeting in June for Waputa, Commissioner Arsenault. Looks like it's Zoom only.
Is Commissioner Commissioner McKenna, are you the chair of the Education Committee?
Yes, I am.
I think he's involved in strategic planning also. Gary, am I correct?
I believe I am.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'll be attending.
Hey, I'll follow up with each of you about hotels. And June APPA National Conference. Commissioner Allen and Commissioner Smith have let me know they plan to attend. Is anyone else?
It's a Seattle APPA.
Yeah.
This is Steve. I'll be attending.
Okay.
And Lisa, I'm still working on plans for that. I'll have to let you know.
Maybe I'll hold the room just in case.
Okay, that's probably a good idea.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'm not sure if I responded to the pre-conference
seminars.
I do want
to have a note.
Okay.
To follow up with you. If you want to just let me know which ones.
Okay.
And I'll sign you up for them.
Perfect. Both.
Both.
Thanks.
All right. You want to go further than June? We don't really have anything booked out that far.
June sounds good. The rest of them are local after that. I mean, that national conference is good to get our, hopefully we'll find good hotel rooms.
I was just looking at that. I believe it's the convention center.
Yeah.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
I think the closest hotel or the conference hotel is the Sheraton, isn't it?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yep.
I will look into that. Let me know if I can help you with anything else.
Okay.
Thank you.
A lot may change between now and then.
At least we don't have to take an airplane to this one.
Not yet.
Good point, Randy.
When you need one from here, you can't get it. When you need to drive this time of year, it's a question, too.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
You know, I think rather than diving into anything further at this time, it'd be a good place to recess and reconvene at 1 o'clock for our afternoon session, and we'll pick up on the consent agenda at that time and move forward. So, let's take a break.
All right, then.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the March 6, 2023 business session of the Chelan PUD Commission. It's 1 o'clock. We met this morning in study session and recessed and are now reconvening for our afternoon business session. Commissioners, we have before us a consent agenda which was modified this morning to include resolution number 11. Is there a motion for approval of the consent agenda?
So moved.
I would move that we approve the consent agenda as stated, with resolution number 11 being moved.
Well, one of you or Kelly?
I'll second.
Okay, there we go. She moved it, but that's good. Gary moved and Kelly seconded. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. We are now down to the regular agenda, resolution number 9.
Okay, I'd like to invite John Sagasser up. While he's coming up, I'll introduce the resolution. This is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders numbers 2-GMP, which stands for guaranteed maximum price.
Correct.
1, 2-GMP2, 3-GMP2, and 4-GMP2. And authorizing the execution of field work orders, change order number 5-GMP2 to contract number 18-10 with GE Renewables U.S. Limited Liability Corporation of Greenwood Village, Colorado, for the Rock Island Dam Powerhouse 2 Generating Unit Rehabilitation Project. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Kirk. Commissioners, good to see you again. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
So I am John Sagasser, engineering manager down at Rock Island. Also the program manager for Rock Island Powerhouse 2 Rehabilitation. As Kirk mentioned, we're requesting authorization to execute Field Work Order 5 to guaranteed maximum price amendment number 2, which is for site work for Unit U5. So it's Unit U5 at Rock Island Powerhouse 2.
And all this is in great engineer speak.
This is contract language. So Field Work Order 5 adds a little under $1.5 million, $1,443,227.80 to be exact, to GMP2 for associated site work for Unit U5. It includes $850,000 for new Governor oil tanks that are located on elevation 504, which is the lowest level of the powerhouse. $89,000 for new discharge ring expansion joints, $143,000 for thrust and counter thrust bearing membranes, and $361,000 for the associated design build fees. The resolution also includes a request to increase the delegation of authority for contract 1810 with GE from $500,000 to $1 million. As you may or may not know, we started our first unit rehabilitation on January 30th of this year. It's a big milestone for us, so we're actually doing work now and increasing the delegation of authority will assist us in expediting sensitive decision-making and the district's responsiveness to site conditions that we discover during disassembly and refurbishment of the reuse components. It will also allow staff to execute the field work order change orders necessary to ensure prudent and efficient completion of the work, while hopefully keeping the board informed and involved of all the decisions along the way. Any questions?
I might just add that we also did a similar delegation of authority for one of these alternative procurement processes for the service center. That's one of the things we've learned along the way, is that timeliness of decisions on our end greatly impacts the contractor and potential costs. And so that's just one other example of something where we've done something similar with an alternative procurement as well on the delegation of authority.
Any questions from commissioners? John, I have to say, seeing you here reminded me, with Kelly being a new commissioner, of when I first became a commissioner, I was one of the delightful experiences I had was being invited down to Rock Island Dam for a tour, because there are, I mean, it's such a classic dam on the river, and there's so much unique about it that it really, and I don't know if you've got the invitation and got it yet. Good, because it's
had to reschedule, okay. But it's on this month. We'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that, I mean, there's moments that sort of freeze in your mind, and one is seeing a barrel of water with the ironwood bearings sitting in the water. The fact that those bearings were put in the 1920s and are still good is just still amazing to me to this day. So,
yeah. So, well, a couple of things. So, number one, if you're interested, April, we start disassembly. So we're actually going to start taking components apart, and we'll see things that we haven't seen since 1977 or later. So it's an exciting time for us. Also, we will be back talking more about Powerhouse 2, as we have a couple extra guaranteed maximum price amendments for long lead components for our second and third units to be rehabilitated, and site work for our second unit. So that will be in the near future. So
hey,
just about time for my third tour.
There you go.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We can have fun together.
Agenda item number 10.
Were we going to, we voting on them all?
Yeah, take them all together.
Okay.
Yeah. You want to come on up, Devin? Agenda item 10 is a resolution ratifying field work order change order number 1 and 1-pre-construction, 2-pre-construction, and authorizing the issuance of guaranteed maximum price amendment number 1 to procure motor control center equipment for unit U5 under contract number 22-44 with Olson Industrial Electric Incorporated of Springfield, Oregon for the Rock Island Powerhouse 2 unit motor control center replacement project. Welcome, Devin.
Thanks, Kirk. Commissioners, my name is Devin Myers. I'm a project manager down at Rock Island, involved in the Powerhouse 2 rehabilitation program. As Kirk was saying, this resolution is requesting authorization for a guaranteed maximum price amendment number 1 to procure motor control centers for Unit U5 at Powerhouse 2, and also to ratify 3 executed field work orders with Olson Industrial Electric. This is, again, for contract 2044 Rock Island Powerhouse 2 Motor Control Center Replacement. The district is using a progressive design build method to procure equipment and services from Olson for the replacement of MCCs in all 8 units of Powerhouse 2. Just a little bit of background. The district executed a design build contract, including pre-construction services with Olson, for about $390,000 back in February of 2022. And that's all the background there is on this one. We're just getting rolling. So this resolution, again, is wanting to ratify 3 no-cost field work orders. One of them, as Kirk mentioned, it was field work order 1 to the design build agreement, which where we updated and developed and finalized the technical specifications for this contract done during the pre-construction phase. And then 2 field work orders, 1 and 2, extended the time of completion of the pre-construction services. So those are the field work orders. We're also requesting approval for the general manager to execute a GMP amendment, a guaranteed maximum price amendment, to procure motor control centers for U5 at Powerhouse 2. Estimated price for this procurement of the equipment is approximately $350,000. The revised overall contract sum after the execution of this GMP-1 and the field work orders executed to date is roughly $740,000 at this point in time. Our plan will be to come back to the board mid-2023 with another GMP for the installation of this equipment into U5, as well as separate GMP amendments to be negotiated and executed at later dates for the remaining MCC equipment and unit installations. Are there any questions?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Question, fellow commissioners, any questions? Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, at home, you can hit that button and your camera's not on, so it makes it easier for me to just stare at this and we'll work through it. Thanks.
Okay. Commissioners, we have two resolutions before us, resolutions 9 and 10. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve resolutions 9 and 10. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Motion is carried. Now, did we cover all manager items?
We did.
And we had covered commissioner travel. At this point, we'll move into commissioner items. And before we get to the motion, I just want to ask Gary and Kelly any thoughts or comments on last week's meetings in Washington, D.C.?
After you, Gary. What?
No, I was going to say after you, Kelly.
It was phenomenal in so many ways, particularly meeting with our electeds. And I actually did not think that the Columbia River Treaty had much traction, but it seems like there's stuff moving there. Was that your takeaway, Gary?
Yes.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if we're invited to the table as things move forward. You know, I know that was the big ask, right?
Yep.
But it was great. The travel was awesome.
At the table rather than on the table. Any thoughts, Gary?
Yes, actually I do. And I wanna give a really big shout out to Kelly. She did a really great job. Kind of at the last minute, she was asked to be the lead at a presentation for one of the congressman's aides, and she did a fabulous, knock the ball out of the park kind of job. Kept everything together, was very precise, very professional. Kelly, you did a great job. I was very impressed.
Thank you.
So thank you. Thank you for that. I think the time was well spent. And I think that we were very fortunate in Washington, D.C. to be able to have the ear of our legislators who, for the most part, listened very intently and were truly concerned about the issues that we brought to them and wanted to help. And so the come away from that was I really feel that we informed our legislators. They responded accordingly and very, very impressive. So everyone did a great job. Randy, you and I did not share a meeting together, but I'm certain that you did a bang up job like you always do. You're always one of the best presenters out there. I've seen you in action in the past, and you I can only hope to someday even get close to the quality of presentations that you give back. So anyway, it's good. My observation was it was a time well spent, even though it was a little frustrating with some flight problems. But it was definitely time well spent.
Well, my only comment is I got feedback about Kelly.
Uh-oh.
And that she hit one out of the park in that meeting that she led. Just for those that might be listening, these meetings aren't sometimes all they're made up to be or built up to be. When she found out that she was leading a meeting that was being held in a staircase, she looked at the aide and said, is the meeting really going to be held here? And that one got everybody's attention, Kelly. I just want you to know that was great. It was really was. So, but no, I thought the meetings went well, and definitely the Columbia River Treaty, in the meetings I was in, I chose not to launch into any, direct discussion, rather ask the aide, how much do you know about the Columbia River Treaty? And then I got a sermon from them. And because they are fully engaged in that, and I won't call it a sermon, but they didn't need much education about what we're concerned about, whether or not we ultimately are successful in being able to fully participate in the decision-making is yet to be seen.
And the diagram that Kirk provided was
powerful. Helpful. That was, yeah. That
powerful. Perfect yeah. time.
Yeah, you bet. So anyway, it was a good several days in spite of having jet lag, having to take a red eye special unexpectedly. So good enough.
I just want to thank you all for your time back there and representing our customers so well in the meetings that you had. You were all very well prepared, and I appreciate the leadership and the representation of our constituents. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other commissioner items? We have before us a need to set a special meeting. Could I get one of the commissioners to propose a motion?
So many words we have here, our team. I will propose to set a special meeting on Friday, March 24th, 2023 at 9 a.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee, for the purpose of holding an executive session to review the performance of a public employee.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to set a special meeting. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion has carried. All right, follow up on delegation of action items from previous meeting.
I don't have any updates from previous meetings, and we did not capture any new ones today.
Okay. Is there any additional public comments? Seeing no public in the room, I don't think there will be any. Any other matters of business that necessarily may come before the commission? Hearing none, we are in need of an executive session for about 60 minutes.
Correct.
To discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, or potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, to consider the selection of a site or an acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of decreased price as authorized by the RCWs. And I already mentioned the 60 minutes. So with that, I don't think we need a break. We've just barely come into session. So let's move. We have to change from one teams to the other. Let's move right in to executive session. We're coming out of executive session. It's 2:25 p.m. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any other business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.